You ready for rapid fire?
I'm so ready. I thought that's what you might be dumb to over there.
We got a new card.
That's right.
Rapid fire, right on the screen there. That's what I was looking for. Today's the first day we've had it. Brian was
right.
One of the things Brian was showing us.
I like it. It's a nice clean look. We don't have kind of the picture of the background anymore. It's just like, here we are. This is it. I dig it.
Very clean.
Very clean.
Very clean.
It's like the icy white uniform, Sean. Just clean.
Okay. It looks like missing.
Uh-oh.
Something here. For some reason, I'm supposed to have all these cuts on my screen, but they're not. Oh, here it is. I pushed the wrong button. So we had some assistant coach press conferences today. We got to talk to both new defensive coordinator Chris Ash, as well as new running backs coach Jaywon Sider. And in case Tommy Guns is in the house, he was asking for the official pronunciation. It is Jaywon Sider. We got that official today. Jaywon Sider is how it's said. But we're going to start with Chris Ash, starting with his defensive philosophy, as in, whose defense are you going to run? What's the defense going to look like? You haven't been a defensive coordinator for a few years. So here's the answer.
It's been a really good football played here on defense. There's been standards. There's been accountability. They've been well coached. And we're just looking at ways that we can try to enhance it and make it better. Conceptually, we're going to keep doing a lot of the same things that have been done here. Terminology may change a little bit. Some fundamentals may change a little bit. But at the end of the day, the way Notre Dame has played defense is the way Notre Dame is going to play defense in the future. I'm here to become one of them. And that's what they're not here to adjust to me. I'm here to adjust to them. The staff, the players, the scheme, the whole overall culture of the organization, that's what I'm coming to be a part of. This is Notre Dame's defense. This is not my defense. This is Notre Dame's. And I'm coming here to try to help continue the success that they've had on defense and find ways to try to make it better. That's it.
All right. So there's Chris Ash. And Joe dropped this question in earlier in the mailbag. Were you convinced by the repetitive response from Chris Ash? This is Notre Dame's defense. I just want to keep it going. What do you think, Vince? You just heard it for the first time, I believe.
Yep, that was the first time. I like the philosophy, and I have a feeling that's the charge that was given to him by Marcus Freeman. Like, look, if you're going to come here, we'd love to have you. Yeah, we'd love to have you, but we've had a lot of success, and we would like to continue it. And we've got the people in place to continue it, and so that's what you're going to do. You're going to continue it. And you're also going to continue it with the coaches that we have in place. You know, that's why, remember we talked when this first went down of him getting hired as the coach. It's like, it's kind of a pigeonholed position because you're coming into Notre Dame. You're going to have to run the defense that's already here. You're not going to be able to bring in any of your own coaches. You know, you're going to have to deal with the coaches that are already on staff. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not a lot of high level defensive coordinators that would be like, yeah, I'm in for that. You know what I mean? And so that's why you have a Chris Ash here, right? And so I absolutely believe that that's the plan. I think that was on the job description sent out.
It really, you know, when Al Golden showed up, you know, Al Golden and Marcus Freeman, you know, Freeman came in, you know, because Golden had, you know, he had a lot of experience both as a head coach and defensive coordinator and came from the NFL. And Freeman was like, this is his defense, you know, and you know, Golden said, we're basically keeping a lot of the terminology. I'm going to, you know, do more learning so they don't have to, you know, all those different kind of things. I mean, like, at least the foundation of the defense in terms of you've got a Viper defensive end, you've got a Rover, you know, structurally, those kind of things that stayed in place from Clark Lee to Al Golden. And now it gets handed off to Chris Ash. The biggest difference is going to be just the philosophy of how the defensive coordinator calls the game, how aggressive he is. I don't think Chris Ash probably is going to, you know, blitz to the extent, you know, that Al Golden did, and, you know, just how complex things are, you know, they're like, so there's going to be, you know, at least some philosophical differences there, but I think it just makes sense that you're going to keep, like, this is the defense that we've had. It works. Why scrap the system? Because we just went to the freaking national championship game with an elite defense.
Correct.
So I think it makes a lot of sense.
It's, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, it's not broke. It's in very good hands. It's a very good foundation. You got very good players. He won't need to blitz as much, I don't think, with the personnel that they're going to have on the field and some different things. But you're right. The difference is going to be on game day, the play calling, the philosophy, even though that philosophy is dictated by the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
You're still going to see some differences. It's just, this is Notre Dame's defense. I have a feeling he's just repeating what Marcus Freeman said to him in the interview. Like, that's how, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's going to be too much different. No. Michael says he has to admit he was impressed with Chris Ash at the presser. One thing that happened before the press conference even started, you know, we were like media, we were sitting, you know, in the room, and Ash came in first before J1 Sider was there, and he went around to each of us, shook our hand, introduced himself. We got a chance to introduce ourselves to him. That doesn't happen very often. So, I mean, at least, you know, good impression, you know, still got to go out and show that he can do it. But I thought it was, you know, you'd rather win games than win the press conference. But I felt like he had a good press conference today. It's at least a good start.
You get one opportunity to make a first impression. So,
yeah, thought it was a good one.
You know, see how it goes. Charlie Weiss made a great first impression at his press conference, too. Most people do.
Most people.
Most. I said most.
Chris Ash also asked why now in terms of coming to Notre Dame.
It's a great question. I really enjoyed what I was doing. I was actually in personnel this last year in Jacksonville. I enjoyed that. It was a great learning opportunity. Wasn't looking for another job. Coach Freeman called, and we started to have some initial conversations. And I looked at the whole thing. It's Notre Dame, the type of people that come to Notre Dame, players, staff, obviously the recent success, the opportunity for sustained success in the future. All of those things together made this a no-brainer for me. And it was going to take a lot to leave where we were at, but this was one of those jobs that you just can't pass up on.
Saying all the right things, Sean Stiers.
Saying the right things, pushing the right buttons.
It's like he listened to the parting words of Al Golden. It was like, you know what? That sounds really good. I think I should say those things. And he did.
I mean, and it really, like, some of those things really weren't that different than the things Al Golden was saying when he came here either.
It's Marcus
Freeman, it's Notre Dame, you know, all those things.
Now, the most interesting thing taken from that particular soundbite was that Marcus Freeman reached out to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know if there was an agent involved, you know, that maybe reached out to Notre Dame first with interest. We don't know that. But I find it interesting that he's the one that reached out to Chris Ash, that Marcus Freeman is the one that reached out. I find that to be interesting.
They do both have the same agent.
That's apparently. True.
So,
I'm sure,
you know, that's a good middleman
right
there.
Sure.
As a starter. So, yeah. But yeah, you know, again, I like Salty was asking impressions of Ash, impressions of Sider. We're going to get a lot more into it. We're going to hear some more of their comments on tomorrow's show, but I will say, you know, like there was kind of a checklist of things I think that you want to hear. And when he comes, you know, right out of the gate talking about, we're not scrapping this defense. This is Notre Dame's defense, and basically I'm the facilitator of the defense. I'm going to be the one, you know, who changes, you know, to fit what the players need. I think that that's a really good start.
I love that attitude. I mean, you know, you can't, like I said, saying all the right things. That's a good sign.
J1 Sider, new running backs coach, also asked, why now? By me, actually.
It was never easy. You've been in a place 7 years. The type of room that we have built at Penn State, the culture with those kids. It's timing, right? It's never the right time, and you know, it's never a bad time. Sometimes you're at the back end where you don't have no control of it, and you get, you know, staff get let go, and you got to leave, and you're on a staff where you win, and you don't have to leave. But
you know, we talked about it. We, me and the family, it was just like you say no every year, or, you know what I mean, you don't want to also be complacent either. It was Notre Dame. It was Marcus Freeman. We built a relationship 14 years ago when we were young coaches in this profession. Through Jared Parker, who used to be here, they just went to Purdue, and we was on the road together, and we kind of hit it off. It almost like, I was telling my wife, sometimes it's like talking to myself. You know, when I talk to him, I'm like, I'm talking to myself. And we just stayed in touch. We just stayed in touch, and then we always said it had to take something special for us to leave, right? Whether it's a head coach, a coordinator position, you know, there was some chance with some NFL teams, but when this opportunity came, we thought hard about it. You know, we turned the phone off for a couple of days. The only person we really talked to was Mark, is a little bit here and there. And we just said, like, you know, it was time to do something different. Go challenge yourself, you know, go walk in different shoes. And I felt comfortable doing that because at the end of the season last year, when I met with my two kids that came back, I told them, do not come back to Penn State, come back for me. Make sure if you come back, you come back for your own selfish reason, or you leave for your own selfish reason, and I will support you in any manner I can.
I thought this one was a little more interesting, you know, hearing J1 Sider say that.
Word Vince, salad.
Like, you're going word salad. I mean,
it was a lot of that, but it
comes
ahead.
Down to Marcus Freeman to me, you know, because like he talked about Jared Parker and the connection. Basically, he was saying when Freeman and Parker went to Purdue, those guys were kind of out on the road together, apparently recruiting at some different places, because I think that Sider at that point was at Marshall and West Virginia around the time that those guys were at Purdue. And obviously, you know, Parker ultimately ended up with a connection to West. So they're just like this, like, and he talked more about Parker specifically later, but I mean, ultimately, like I was, you know, like, this guy had a great situation at Penn State. He had been there for 7 years. He just had 2,000-yard running backs. He's been the co-offensive coordinator, assistant head coach. So he had all this title and everything else. He's not going to be the co-offensive coordinator here. He's got a little extra, you know, associate coach or whatever it is, you know, that comes with it here at Notre Dame. But ultimately, like everything else, apparently, it comes down to Marcus Freeman. Like Marcus Freeman is the relationship guy, and he's always been the relationship guy, and he's had that connection with Sider for a long time, even though looking at their coaching paths and resumes, if you look at them, like, there was no actual overlap there, but they had some overlap just, you know, in the summers recruiting and those kind of things.
I would say, if I'm listening to that as a Penn State fan, I'm like,
you're not,
you didn't give
happy.
Me a reason. You didn't give me a reason. I don't understand why you left. Like, that's what I got out of that answer.
Right.
We hear Marcus Freeman, and I agree with you completely on that. It was, he wants to work for Marcus Freeman. Who wouldn't when your options are Marcus Freeman or James Franklin? I think the winner is clear, but you know, again, if I'm a Penn State fan, I'm still upset, man, that he left. I don't know how else to say it. I'm upset about it, but he wanted to be here, and it's all about relationships, and that's what it was. And he's a heck of a coach, man. This is a absolute home run, grand slam, no matter how you slice it higher. And Notre Dame fans should be about as fired up as you could possibly be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. By the way, Siggy 13 asking, what is Believe? And if you're watching on the YouTube show, you see BLEAV. We have been, since the start of the new year, part of the Believe podcast network. And, you know, we used to be hosted by another podcast network. We are now hosted by Believe. And we appreciate the relationship that we have with
you. Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that, from everything that I've been told, things seem to be going extremely well right now.
Look, it's a great relationship. If you have Fubo Television, there's a Believe station on there, and you could find some Irish Breakdown shows on there, as well as other Believe podcasting network shows on there. So that's kind of a fun channel to look at if you're you know, want some background noise and things like that. But yeah, Believe has been an awesome partner, and we're talking about doing all kinds of different stuff. So we're excited about it. And DK's not wrong. Believe is elite.
Believe is elite. Yes.
They just are.
You better believe it.
That's right. Ooh. See, the puns are they're there. They're there for the taking.
They are.
All I can say.
It's easy with this one, though.
It is.
Okay, so one more from Jaywan Sider. Talked a little bit about the running back room philosophy.
Me, as a coach, I always believe you coach the bottom of your roster no different than you coach the top of your roster. And that's how you build depth. Because your fifth can easily become your one. And so you got to prepare like that throughout the week. So I always believe in throughout the week, so we in season, try to have four guys ready. Because it's hard to get five or six guys ready. But have four guys in a rotation where they can learn, they can have a process to be ready to play in the game because there's an anchor injury, right? We play a physical game. We're the one position where every play somebody's trying to hit you, right? And so we have to have guys ready and we have to build depth to get to the championship, which Notre Dame did. You got to have depth. You know, injuries happen. I thought one of the greatest things to go play against this team last year, from my offensive point of view, they had a lot of injuries. And you never knew the difference who was in the game, whether a guy injured or this guy been playing all year, which is a testament to this program where Coach Freeman built.
So without coming out and saying, well, Dylan McCullough had a list of eight jobs, you know, for his running. That's kind of how I was trying to, you know, I said, you know, it goes beyond just the top two guys on the depth chart, you know, or, you know, like what's your philosophy in terms of how you, you know, use guys throughout the running back room. So that was kind of the answer to that. So I don't know. What do you think of that, Vince?
Got to coach your roster top to bottom. You know, it was a good answer. You know what I mean? I think I have a feeling it's going to be a little bit more top heavy than maybe it was under the last coach.
Well, and that's what, like, listening to that, I mean, everyone wants to, you know, you got to have depth and all those different
one, two punch kind of a deal. Like, I think you're going to see a little bit more of that than maybe in the past, but who knows? I mean, look, I don't know. I can't speak to the talent, the depth outside of the top two guys at Penn State, you know, what they had in their room. I know the depth at Notre Dame and they've got some good depth, right? You can get those guys on the field in some packages and in some different things. And I think that's good. That would be my charge if I'm Marcus Freeman. Like, look, I get 1A, 1B. Those guys are elite. Make it happen. But you got some other guys here that you kind of need to feed the rock to a little bit. You know, not only to keep them happy, which is I would never coach like that. But at the same time, we are in the world of the transfer portal. You got to keep them somewhat happy.
I think I think in today's game, that's even more of a thing than ever. Like, 100%. You've got to find ways, you know, it's not, again, you're not just going to play everybody for the sake of playing everybody,
right?
But to keep your room intact and to make sure that you keep that depth and high level depth going forward, I think that you do have to find ways to kind of keep these guys involved.
Agreed. So, agreed. Yeah. And look, the reality of the situation is you're going to lose your top two guys after the 25 season. And so those guys better be ready to roll that are behind them. And so it would behoove you to make sure that they are involved in the game plan and things of that nature. That's where I would be.
Right. Joe wants to know the future of the running back room. The top two could go to the NFL next year. I fully expect both of them to go to the NFL.
100% expect it as well. Yeah. So the future is Kedron Young and Aeneas Williams. And that's not a bad 1-2 punch there either. Cause they are different styles of backs. And I think you're going to be just fine in that nature. As long as they keep recruiting that room the way they've been, future of the room is fine. But enjoy 25 because you're going to have two elite guys at 1A, 1B.
Right. But again, you know, that's why, like, when you look at Jaywan Sider and the kind of recruiting that he did at Penn State, easily transferable coming to Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when you've got guys like Love and Price making highlight plays, you know, like that's a big recruiting piece for you as well. When those guys are sitting there in high school and they're seeing those guys make those kind of plays every week on national TV, that'll help you as well. And I mean, I think, you know, we were talking about Aeneas Williams a couple of weeks ago, and I like someone was saying, oh, Aeneas is a Sherlock, you know, NFL running back. Well, I mean, he hasn't had the opportunities to show that he's a surefire block NFL running back.
Yes.
Yet. I think
he's got 2 years left, obviously, at Notre Dame minimum. And one of those years, at least, he'll be probably a featured back. So, you know, I would still use him. He's clearly a weapon that you can use. You know what I mean? I would definitely still use him.
And I think if you want to, you know, like we've talked about 21 personnel and, you know, or even 22 or whatever it happens to be, like if you want to keep some, you know, make sure you're keeping some extra tread on the tires of both Love and Price, Aeneas Williams, I mean, look at what he showed you, you know, with that pass reception that he had in the Penn State game, as an example, like the ability to catch the ball and run the ball. I think that you could easily pair up him with one of those two other guys and get one of those other guys off the field, you know, as you're managing snap counts and,
yeah,
and that kind of thing. On the subject of the coaches, DK wants to know if Freeman is taking over for Saban at resurrecting careers. I mean, really, I mean, did Al Golden's career really need resurrecting? Right. Like, if that's right. The implication there. I think he just needed the opportunity to prove he could be a defensive coordinator at this level.
Yeah, I like it.
But, you know, obviously the reference is to Ash. I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, we'll this would be, you know, number two, I guess, on the list. So we'll see. I mean, Al Golden definitely got a step up when he left Notre Dame. And we'll see what happens with Chris Ash. If that's the career trajectory that he's trying to get. Like I felt that it was clear that Al Golden was either going to be a college head coach again or get back into the NFL as a DC. Like that was always his drive and his motivation, I think. I think he might have underestimated Notre Dame to a degree with the kind of kids that are here and being able to do some certain things. I think that's probably accurate, but he got what he wanted out of the deal. Let's be honest. He got what he wanted at the place that he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't have worked out better for Al Golden. I don't know what Chris Ash's, you know, career aspirations are. He was an analyst in Jacksonville or wherever it was, right? Now he's a defensive coordinator with one of the best defenses in the country. Like, I don't know what his career aspirations are. He said he wasn't looking for a job, and one just fell in his lap, basically. Like,
because Marcus Freeman called it.
Yeah, right. What a great situation that is.
I know. Like, I was just sitting down there in Jacksonville, minding my own business, and Marcus Freeman offered me a job to be defensive coordinator
at one of the best universities with one of the best defenses. Like, okay, I guess, yeah, why not? Hey, Marcus, I'll see you in South Bend. You know, like, that's just wild to me. Wild.
Yep. Fill in the blank. It's blank. Nebraska has opted out of a 2-year home-and-home football series with Tennessee, replacing the Vols with home games against Bowling Green in 2026 and Miami, Ohio in 2027.
It's telling about who Nebraska thinks they are. But seriously, like that, they don't have a very high opinion of themselves, is what I think.
I'll give you their explanation before you go further, because I didn't, like, there's only so much I can include in this quote. So they say is they're doing renovations on Memorial Stadium over the next couple of years.
Okay.
And so because there's going to be reduced seating as a result, they had to get rid of the Tennessee game, and they needed an 8th home game in each of those seasons. So that's why they have added Miami and Bowling Green and taking Tennessee off.
That is a bunch of malarkey is what that is.
I tend to agree.
Wow. Like, you're going to take an elite team, a potentially elite SEC team, off your schedule because you don't think your stadium's big enough. Go play in Nashville then.
They've been trying to make this happen for like 20 some years at this point. And they were on the verge of getting this home and home, and then Nebraska cancels it. But could you imagine if Notre Dame took Alabama off the schedule when it's coming up and replaced him with Bowling Green and Miami in back-to-back years?
It'd be like awful. What
people would be saying about Notre Dame and their scheduling.
Pete Bavakwa specifically, like they'd be hanging him in effigy, basically, is what would be happening. That's inexcusable, in my opinion. I'm sorry. That's inexcusable. You can find – I don't care how big your state. Play him at a high school stadium. It doesn't matter. It's what happens on the field.
How about just charge a more premium price for that Tennessee game? And, exactly. I mean, you're going to sell them anyway. So just charge a more premium price, even if you're going to lose some seats. Like, why? I think you're right. I think it sounds like a bunch of BS to me. Mark, it's funny that you say that, because that's the next question.
Yep.
Since Tennessee has openings in 2026 and 27, would you like to see the Irish add them, considering Notre Dame still has openings on their schedule for both of those seasons? So I'll pull up 2026 and 2027.
Okay.
So here's what 2026 has so far. Wisconsin in Green Bay, Michigan State at Purdue, at North Carolina, Navy at USC, Miami, Syracuse, SMU, at Florida State. That's what's on 2026 so far. 2027, Purdue at Michigan State, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, at Clemson, Navy at Duke, Wake Forest.
So obviously the 27 schedule is still very bare bones, right? It's just the ACC schedule that is, you know,
the 2027 schedule.
20 years, basically, or whatever it is. Yeah, 27 schedule. The 26 schedule is obviously way more put together. It still needs a punch up, in my opinion. I can't remember how you phrased the question because I don't have it in front of me. The bottom line is, I think they should do it. I would do a home and away with Tennessee. I would. It gets you an SEC opponent, which I think should always be a goal, to be honest with you. I really do. And obviously there's no SEC opponent on the schedule in 26 or 27. At least I don't believe so, because that Alabama series doesn't start yet. So, yeah, I would do it.
For 26, you have Wisconsin. Okay, yep. What are they going to be? Right. That'd be year, what, 5, I guess, for Luke Fickell by then. You've got Miami and Florida State. I would do it as a one-off in 2027. If you could get Tennessee to do like a Shamrock Series game, maybe in the new stadium down there in Nashville or something.
Oh, yeah.
I would do a one-off in 27. I wouldn't want to add to 26. Because even though, like, as of right now, like, the 26 schedule, you know, again, it doesn't jump out at you, but you do still, you've got Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Purdue, North Carolina. What are they going to be? USC, what are they going to be? Miami, Florida State. I think that you've got enough there in 26 that you don't need to punch that up. It's the 2027 where basically you've just got Wake Forest, Michigan State. If I would do it, like I said, a one-off Shamrock Series game in 2027, if Tennessee would want to do something like that. That's what I would want to do.
You got 4 Big Ten schools, you got 5 ACC schools, and you got 1 group of 5 schools in Navy in 26. So you're looking for 2 games. I'm good with it, man. I'm
you know,
good
like with we, balls. Like we've talked about, like with this, with the playoff format getting ready to change and potentially only 1 at large bid left over for Notre Dame and all that kind of stuff. Like, I think the 26 schedule has enough on it, you know, in terms of names like USC, Miami, and Florida State. And again, there's still Michigan State and Wisconsin on there. They all have the, you know, ability to potentially be pretty good teams when you play them. So like, I don't think you need to add more teeth to that. You're not playing a bunch of MAC teams. I don't think, but I don't think you need
to. two games to add.
I guess that's true. You don't have any MAC teams yet. Who knows? I don't think that you need to punch it up, you know, like to that level.
I see where you're coming from.
I'm not saying I'm afraid, but I'm just saying to manage the schedule. I don't think like, your goal is just to win enough games to be in the playoff.
Sure. Now.
So I don't think I think that adding Tennessee in 26 might be overscheduling a little bit.
Here's what I will say. There is the potential that Wisconsin, Michigan State, North Carolina, USC, Florida State are all good to very good teams.
Right. They can all easily
win
teams.
Yeah, if that's the case, then this schedule's fine.
Right.
There is an equal possibility, in my opinion.
They could all be bad.
They could all be awful. You know what I mean? Like,
true.
So if you take the median, right, and you say half,
but you're also playing 3 Big Ten teams,
4
Big Ten teams because of USC. It's not in my brain just yet.
I get
4
it.
Big Ten teams.
Yeah.
And all those, like, you've got your double dose of Miami and Florida State.
And what's SMU going to be? SMU was a playoff team.
That's a very good point. SMU was a playoff team, and they're on the schedule
right
that year. So, you know that they've got a lot of money floating around out there, NIL and everything else. So, like, it's a very good possibility. You know, like, Notre Dame plays Boise State this upcoming season, then SMU, next season. You know, those like were both playoff teams
sure.
last year, even though they're, you know.
I still
so that's want what it. I'm saying. I don't think you need to punch it up in 26.
I get it. I still want it, even though, as they say in Blindside, orange isn't in my color wheel. I still want them. I still want them. Bring them on.
Speaking of North Carolina, college football writer Stuart Mandel of The Athletic graded the offseason college football coaching hires. He gave a letter grade to all the different new hires in college football. He gave North Carolina's hire of Bill Belichick a C. He basically says it's a splashy hire, but NFL coaches have rarely had success in college, and Belichick is going to be no different. Do you buy or sell that, Vince?
I actually buy it. I do. I buy it. I think it is a splashy hire because of who he is and what his name is. I agree with that part. I just don't know that he is going to be a great college coach. You know, he was at the basketball game the other night with his girlfriend, fell asleep. I just don't know that it's going to be for him. I don't know how long he's going to last. And they are throwing a lot of money at this program. I mean, they just reported today that the GM is going to make $1.5 million. You know what I mean? And they're going to treat it like an NFL team. The last time I have intimate knowledge of a coach coming down and treating their program like an NFL team was Charlie Weiss.
Charlie Weiss, and a Belichick disciple.
It didn't work. It didn't work. And that was the quintessential NFL model. He treated practices that way. He did all those things, but he didn't develop the guys, you know, that he needed to develop.
That's right.
They ended up stinking eventually, you know? I just don't know that North Carolina has the roster that Charlie Weiss inherited so that he can just be an NFL guy. They're still going to have to develop guys. And I don't know how well Belichick is going to be able to relate to these players. Now, maybe it's just all about the dollars and the cents and the money, but I'm still not convinced in college that you can just buy a team and be successful year in and year out. That has not proven to be true yet. You know what I mean? You got Florida State who tried to do it. Successful than not. You know what I mean? Colorado, you can say that they've been successful, but they're losing all their talent. And now let's see what they're going to be. You know, so I just, USC, all of those teams, like I'm just not convinced they're going to be able to put it together.
Yeah. Their GM, Mike Lombardi, who we're talking about, you know, he's worked with Belichick in the past. And, you know, he said that they consider themselves the 33rd NFL team. And it's just like the personality that Belichick has and the way that he went about his business in New England, it was very cutthroat. And, you know, it's like either you get in line, follow the marching orders of Bill Belichick, or you're out the door. You know, like you remember like Jonas Gray, you know, had a career game for the Patriots. Then he was late for a meeting and he got cut the next week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, okay, it's one thing to have standards and hold your players to those standards. I get that. But you can't just cut a player in the middle of the season and go pluck a guy off the street in college yet. You know,
right.
And,
good so point. Like, that's, not yet. Not yet.
Yeah. So that's an issue. You know, it's just the Belichick way is a very transactional way. And
yeah.
I agree with what you're saying. Like the state of college football right now. Yeah. Yes. Money comes with it and everything else, but it's a completely different world. And I just don't know that Belichick is going to be able to jump into this world after spending basically 40 some years in the NFL in a complete, you know, same sport, different world though. They are worlds apart just in terms of how things operate. And again, as we were talking about before, it's like an 11 and a half month a year job. And I don't know. I'm very skeptical as well. So I buy what he is saying.
I was wondering which way you were going to go with this one.
Sorry. Yeah, I didn't.
No, that's good. It
took me a while to get to the end, to the actual
answer. No, I meant it just in general. Like when I knew we were going to talk about this, I was like, I wonder which way Sean's going to go. Seriously, I wasn't sure. So I'm generally a skeptical guy to begin with. So
no, you are. Going back to what we were talking about a second ago with the schedule in 26, Archer 452 says there's a real chance only one of the schools that I named him 26 are better than 500. You're
it's
right.
Possible. Sure.
Because that's 2 years from now. But with the transfer portal and everything else, there's also just as good a chance that they're a 10 or 11 win team. Like, look at Florida State from 1 year to the next. Like, look at where Miami is right now. And they're going to keep going out and going into the portal, I think, pretty hard for quarterbacks and that kind of, it's going to change pretty drastically from one year to the next. To me, there's just as, I think you said it. I mean, there's just as good a chance, you're right, that they all could be 500 or worse. I think it's 50-50 that they could all be 10 wins or better, though, at the same time. Because, sure. Like, look at the state of the ACC and the fact, you know, like, what the ACC got into the playoffs this year. And I think there's just as good a chance that Florida State, Miami are both playoff contenders in 2 years. And as you said, SMU was just a playoff team, too. Sure. Who knows what they're going to be? So,
I mean, and that's the thing with the way college football is right now. You there's going to be the one similarity that I think you can draw from NFL and college is the worst to first thing, I think, is a legitimate possibility in college, yeah, where that was never the case before. Okay. Right. So I think it has been proven time and time again, you can use the portal to be good for 1 year. I just don't know that that's sustainable. That's the thing. And so when we're talking about Notre Dame's schedule, there could be a 1 year situation where those teams are good, but is that sustainable? Well, that doesn't matter because we're looking at 26 in a vacuum. So that's the important thing. Still want Tennessee.
All right. Andre wants to know, if you could change one thing in NIL in the transfer portal, what would it be?
I would cap the NIL money. I would cap it somehow, you know, a salary cap, essentially. I would do that. The portal, I would limit. You get one free one. And then after that, you got to sit out.
I agree with that. Because I think that just where the portal has gone in the last few years, I mean, you've just got guys, because of NIL, you've got guys chasing paychecks and greener pastures,
yes,
all over the place. I think you're right. Like, you get one free transfer, and then you've got to sit out after that. I don't know if they'll ever go back to where you have to sit out, though, just because of all these different – everything's going to court, you know? And that's why it's opened up as much as it has. But I think in a perfect world, that's what it would probably be. And I think that I do think that, like, from the NIL aspect, you know, this is something that Jack Swarbrick brought up a couple of years ago. I would like to see a transparent, you know, like, you have to show what the, you know, like, from NIL, what the player is earning and where the money is coming from. There needs to be some kind of national NIL register where that is shown.
Like it.
More transparency with that. So, Vince, a lot of talk this week about whether or not the NFL should ban the Eagles tush push play. Do you buy or sell banning the tush push?
It's a huge sell for me. Huge sell. That is a loser's mentality. Well, we can't stop it, so we better ban it. Stop it. I'm sorry. You've got one team in the NFL that does that play really, really, really well. Do it yourself. Like, I'm sorry. Just because you can't stop it doesn't mean that you ban it. Sell.
You don't change a rule over one team being successful with a specific kind of play. And it's a complete sell for me as well. Like, and I'm obviously, you know, not a fan of the Eagles. I'm a fan of another team in that division, but I don't think you change the rule just because you can't stop it. Get better and figure, yes, out how to stop it, and or just do it yourself. Like, what's stopping other teams, right, from doing this? They're just not doing it, you know?
And I don't know why. Other teams have
tried to some extent, but they're not doing it. So,
exactly. Yeah. Watch film and figure it out. NFL is the copycat league, right? Figure out what they're doing and do it better.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I have no sympathy for the other 31 teams that can't stop the brotherly shove or whatever. Like, no. No, you don't make a rule because you can't stop something. That's such a loser mentality. I hate it. Hate it.
I agree. And you can thank the Green Bay Packers for throwing this back out there. Apparently, they're the ones who.
Well, I mean, they're losers, so that's okay. I understand.
Are they really, Vince?
They're not. But how many I'm a Bears Super Bowls fan.
Have you won since they won?
And they always will be. All right. How many? One, two, one, two, two.
Four total. Four total.
Oh, total. I thought you were talking about recently.
Well, recently two. Yeah.
Okay. Two.
Somewhat recently. I mean, you've got was Favre 2011 got was the last one. Was that Favre one? Got one in the 90s.
Favre got one in the 90s. That's the one I remember. So
Rodgers got one in like 2011, I think it was. Then obviously you got to go back to the first two Super Bowls.
Yeah, I don't count those. So.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for tonight. Appreciate you being here. Appreciate the questions. Good stuff in the mailbag tonight. As always, hit that like button before you leave. And again, thanks to our friends at Believe, our new podcast platform. And of course, what we're like, without getting too overly, you know, explanatory, I guess, about this, we're talking about they host the audio portion,
right?
Like the audio podcast. Like if you go to your Apple or Spotify or whatever, they are the one, they are the host.
Yes. They're the ones that get it to those places.
Yes. Basically. That's right. Yeah. That's right. We, they're kind of our back end where we upload all of our audio.
It took me a while to understand kind of how all this works. But yeah, you got to be associated with a podcast company. And then of course that's how we make money.
It's where the money comes from, baby.
That's how we make money is through the podcasting company. I mean,
that's, the long and the short of it is that's what we're saying. Believe, believe that's where the money's coming from. Now.
Correct. So, yes. Thank you. Based on downloads. So everybody subscribe. To your favorite, you know, whatever podcasting group you use, whether it's Apple or Spotify, whatever, subscribe. So it just automatically downloads. So it automatically goes in my pocket right there. You also get good information.
There it is. It's almost the end of the month, too. All right, hit the like button and we'll talk to you tomorrow on Ivy Nation Sports Talk.